good afternoon.
Oh. Oops. What was that?
I touched the microphone at the same time I talked into it. My bad. It just seemed like it was too far away.
It's like walking and chewing bubblegum at the same time.
Well, that's the wrong angle. There's something going on there. So, anyway, you are catching a...
Anyway.
Anyway. A little inside joke there. It's Bill's mom. We were channeling Bill's mom there for a second. She'll ask you a question, and you get three syllables into the answer, and she'll go, anyway, to talk about something else.
Okay, then.
We tried to get good at it, but we stink at it.
Yeah, we stink at it.
We just go,
laughing.
Anyway, and then we start laughing, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. I tried it again. I still couldn't do it. That being said, you know a lot about Bill's mom, but my name's Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill's mom's Bill.
we talk a lot about our moms because our moms are funny.
Yeah, they're great.
Our moms are funny. It's been kind of a long week. There's been a lot going on, and Ashley's in there repetitively calling our first guest who's not answering his phone. And we're talking about capital gains, so...
That's going to be a short conversation on my part.
Newsflash, we're not winging that one. So we might need to call our second guy, see if maybe he can come on the first hour instead of the second hour. So just in case, you know, you have gone to the website and looked at it and you were trying to follow along, you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. And normally the things on there are accurate. Except for today. Today, they're flexible. We're going to be flexible. And if Myron Magnet is available, we will chat with him just because he's an interesting guy. Maybe he can even hang out with us longer. The first guy was supposed to be Phil Kirpin. He is with the
American Commitment.
Thank you.
Yeah. I was really looking forward to that talk too.
I was too, because
I know a lot about capital gains.
No, and this whole idea of the capital gains inflation tax, and that's going to come up, and then of course it's going to be, oh, it's another tax break for the rich, except for all the guys on the left have supported it for years.
Oh yeah, they all said it was a great idea in 1992. It was a good thing, but now that Trump wants to implement it, it's a bad thing.
It's a bad thing. So we thought, hey, this would be a good topic to bring to people because we're going to have to listen to it, and it would be nice to be a little bit smart about it. So we're going to remain dumb about it for the time being, and in our perfect world, we'll get smart about that later. There's stuff going on in Ashley's room. She's in there doing things. And it looks like maybe something has happened, something good. She's writing me a message. Our friend Myron, he's going to be on in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
That's nice. Okay. So
Ashley's the woman behind the curtain. We're supposed to look back there.
Pay no attention to the woman behind the curtain.
But we have to today because you've got the telephone. And, you know, of course, today is the day that, well, it started yesterday, actually, and I wasn't able to resolve it. My email has become, I don't know. It's got some sort of sickness where it can't find its password and all the things that.
That's not handy.
No, super not handy. And so all the things I've tried to do to reset the password, now it thinks I'm trying to impersonate myself. And so I'm going to have to.
Three strikes, you're out.
Yes.
Yeah, then you got to wait 20 minutes.
Well, I'm going to have to call a guy. I got to call the guy. So anyway, it's bad. I can't even email the guy that set up the first guy we're interviewing. I normally reach him by email, but I can't reach him by email because I can't email. So, you know, it's one of those days where we just can't get there from here. You know, I did play something yesterday. I was at a conference. I think we should do that. So, Ashley, why don't you bust onto your YouTube? We'll just do this in real time. And I will send you the little link here. I should have left it up. It was right there on my computer. It just seems like so many of these issues that we're having now, if you're over 30 years old, a lot of this stuff used to be some of our... Oh, you want me to play it from here? She's like, toss me a little cord here. Oh, we're going to do something new.
I'm scared.
We know you have the ability to change the channel. We just hope you'll hang with us. So anyway... The comedy of the, you know, years ago, comedy, we used to be able to joke about all sorts of things. And oddly enough, a lot of the things we used to joke about are real now.
Yeah, they're real, and you can't joke about
them. And you can't joke about them, but they used to, this used to be, this was like high humor. Mm-hmm. So for all those people that are Monty Python fans, you'll like this, and you'll probably remember it if you haven't seen it of late. It's from The Life of Brian. It's a Monty Python sketch, and they're sitting on the steps of the forum, and the title of the sketch is, I Want to Be a Woman. Now, remember in Monty Python, they talk with those British accents, so some of it's a little bit sometimes difficult to catch. But bottom line is there's three guys and a lady, and they're I'll post it online so you can see it after. But there are three men and a woman sitting on the steps, and they're kind of talking about what would be, I guess, the equivalent of our Constitution. And they're looking at, you know, how do they want this thing to go? What do they want it to say? And this little conversation breaks out. That is vaguely reminiscent of today, although this was 1979. Alec is a romantic. And that's a little commercial that's going to play until we can get past the ad. So irritating.
It's pretty amazing that
they haven't banned us from YouTube yet, though, so I guess that's good.
Joking about it in the 70s, and today it's
today it's real.
It's real.
Like ours, must reflect such a divergence of interest within its power base.
Agreed. Francis? Yeah. I think Judith's point of view is very valid, Rich, provided the movement never forgets that it is the inalienable right of every man
or woman
to rid himself
or herself.
Agreed.
Thank you, brother.
Or sister. Where was I?
A pronoun.
I think you finished. Oh, right. Furthermore, it is the birthright of every man
or woman.
Why don't you shut up about women, Stan? You're putting us off.
Women have a perfect right to play a part in our movement, Reg.
Why are you always on about women, Stan?
I want to be one.
What?
I want to be a woman. From now on, I want you all to call me Loretta.
What?
It's my right as a man.
What?
Well, why do you want to be Loretta, Stan?
I want to have babies.
You want to have babies?
It's every man's right to have babies if he wants them.
But you can't have babies!
Don't you oppress me.
I'm not oppressing you, Stan. You haven't got a womb. Where's the fetus going to gestate? You're going to keep it in a box?
Here, I've got an idea. Suppose you agree that he can't actually have babies, not having a womb, which is nobody's fault, not even the Romans, but that he can have the right to have babies.
Good idea, Judith. We shall fight the oppressors for your right to have babies, brother. Sister, sorry. What's the point?
What?
What's the point of fighting for his right to have babies when he can't have babies? It is symbolic of our struggle against oppression.
Symbolic of his struggle against reality.
And I'm sure we probably had those conversations for real in late.
Well, we were having this came up yesterday. And so the idea of, you know, 75 genders or whatever we were doing. And it's like, and it made me think of this video. So anyway, I showed it to a group of people who most were unfamiliar. I'm like, this was 1979. We were joking about this stuff. And now it's
no joke.
Ripped right from the headlines.
Maybe that's where the idea came from.
Yeah, we can blame it all on Monty Python.
Monty Python.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, somebody's got to get blamed, and it's usually me. So let's blame Monty Python. I'll just take a break from being blamed. And let's see, I've got another fun video we'll do after we come back. We're going to take a quick break, maybe. I don't know. Ashley, give me a nod. Oh yeah, it's the up down nod. We've definitely taken a break. We're going to celebrate a little capitalism here. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
I
They even wrote a song for us.
That was just for today.
Oh, yeah. That's the only time we've ever played it.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. That's a lie. Really. That's a lie. So, I was at a Constitution convention yesterday, like just a kind of celebration of the Constitution, since the birthday of the Constitution is the 17th. So that'll be Tuesday. 232 years.
232, 231, yeah.
We picked 231, but that was the year we implemented. We wrote it the year before, so it's 232. And it's so anyway, we had a bunch of different speakers on different topics, and I was supposed to be at the end, and at the end it just, I don't know, we talked about the UN, we talked about all these things that, I don't know, kind of lights everybody's hair on fire. People start feeling really worried and, oh my gosh, we're not going to make it and it's not going to get fixed and the bad guys have got a leg up on us and we're doomed. And I just, if you haven't seen it already, and I will post this because watching it is as funny as listening to it, but the Democratic Socialists had a convention in Sacramento, August 5th. And so here are all these little Democratic Socialists. I'll just kind of like set the little stage for you. What, they're all wearing red bandanas around their neck.
Right.
And they call each other comrade, which is pretty darn funny.
And they're very hung up on rules.
And they like rules. This is the beginning of their, so this is all the Democratic Socialists have come to Sacramento and they are all meeting and they're going to have a convention because they, you know, they're going to take over. And I'm thinking, you know, as you listen to this, you probably hear, you know, Lenin and some of those guys and Marx, you know, twirling around in their graves. They're like, we didn't write all this madness for these idiots. So they're upset that other people are talking and things. And so the part you won't be able to, I mean, well, obviously you can't see it because we're on radio, but they've got their little hands in the air and they're wiggling their fingers. They call it jazz hands,
jazz
apparently.
Hands. You can't clap. You have to just raise your hands.
He doesn't want them to clap.
Shake them.
Yeah, you have to wiggle, you have to stick your arms in the air and wiggle your fingers. So picture all these knuckleheads in their little commie outfits with their bandanas and stuff, calling each other comrade. But let's hear about how tough they are, because this is the army
this is who we're up against.
This is the army that conservatives are up against. I think actually you're going to feel better. This is the moment of hope. And I've pushed the button. And I've
unmuted. No, he, him. I. Just
oh, wait,
say,
don't want to miss that part. Sorry,
I'll
start over.
Point of privilege. Quick point of personal
privilege.
Guys, first of all, James Jackson, Sacramento, he, him. I just want to say, can we please keep the chatter to a minimum? I'm one of the people who's very, very prone to sensory overload. There's a lot of whispering and chatter going on. It's making it very difficult for me to focus. Please, can we just, I know we're all fresh and ready to go, but can we please just keep the chatter to a minimum? It's affecting my ability to focus. Thank you.
Thank you, comrade. Okay, is there a speaker against name,
point
chapter,
of personal
pronoun?
Privilege. Point of personal privilege?
Yes.
Please do not use gendered language to address everyone.
Okay.
Shake
quick
your
point
hands.
Of privilege once
Shake
again.
Your hands.
Quick point of privilege once again. Hi, James Jackson, Sacramento DSA, he, him. I have already asked people to be mindful of the chatter of their comrades who are sensitive to sensory overload, and that goes double for the heckling and the hissing. It is also triggering to my anxiety. Like, the be comradely isn't just for, like, you know, let's keep things civil
what
or whatever.
A warrior.
It's so that
what
people aren't going to get triggered and so that it doesn't affect their performance as a delegate, okay? Your need to express yourself is important, but your need to express yourself should not trump or over.
Oops, he used the
like, I see that no one's clapping for me. It could be because I'm not engaging, but it also is because everyone's doing this. And that's really
raise
important
your hands,
because
fingers.
Those loud bursts of noise, even though this is a noisy space, when we can do something like reducing that, that's really important. So please don't clap, shoot up these. We have a lot of disabled comrades. And a lot of those are invisible disabilities. You don't know who it is that is having a more difficult time navigating this space. And this space was not created with all of their needs in mind. So it's up to us to modify that space to make sure that everybody is able to move in the ways that they need to move. And additionally, with the noise issue, like avoid hissing, avoid waving banners, right? because those there's all sorts of things. If you don't know what to do, show up these, right? I'm sure there's lots of ways that we can communicate to each other without needing to rely on something that's going to hurt somebody else. We have quiet rooms that are available. There's a range of options of these, right?
Teddy bears.
Please don't go into that space with anything that's like an aggressive scent, for instance, right?
You
don't
want to
put people in stressful situations that they don't consent to, right? And right-wing infiltrators who are trying to get in here, but it's going to be really traumatic for people if we're not making an affirmative effort to de-escalate each other and de-escalate ourselves, right? Take a deep breath.
They all had to do it together.
Doesn't feel better? Before you say anything. Don't really talk to anybody who doesn't have a credential, especially if you claim to be from the press. You have no idea who that person is. Please do not talk to anybody who identifies themselves as a member of the press without having credentials. Don't talk to cops. Don't talk to MAGA assholes. We're almost there.
Raise your hands.
But thank you. We are going to be visited tomorrow by some MAGA protesters. Is there anybody here who's done abortion clinic escort work? By all means, don't talk to cops if there are cops there for any reason at all, right? And if you do see someone talking to cops, let the marshals know.
We are
safe and we are strong because there's power in collective work.
Collective handshaking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hand wringing.
Now, there are some sensitive people out there that are wanting to take control.
Are you trying to wear an aggressive scent?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I was. It was my high karate I put on this morning. Very aggressive.
Okay. All I can think of is, you know how they tell you when you're out in the wilderness, if you see a wild animal, you're supposed to like shape yourself like the letter X, like stick your arms in the air and stick your legs apart and then scream really loud. I thought, you know, if like three people went in that room and did that, they'd all
hit the floor.
You just hear them like timber going down right on the floor.
Yeah. It's incredible that they're so sensitive.
So those are the Democratic Socialists of America. Yes. They really couldn't have a convention because they couldn't decide what pronoun they were or whether or not they could wiggle banners or wave their fingers.
It took them 10 minutes just to get the pronouns.
Point of personal privilege.
Personal privilege.
The best part was at the conference I was at yesterday, some guy said that earlier in the day, but he didn't know the joke. And I thought, oh, that's kind of funny.
Yeah.
I wonder if he's going to like my video.
Yeah.
How awkward.
He kind of slunk down in his chair a little bit.
Yeah, it's too late. So what's going on in the control room, Ashley?
We have Myron on the
line. Stop it. We do?
Yay.
Myron, our hero. So let's adequately introduce our hero who has come to us early. Oh, and then I guess we probably have to take a stupid break, don't we? Oh, darn, capitalism keeps interfering. But, you know, without that, we'd have to... We'd have to stop rustling.
Democratic socialists
That's
involved.
Right. We'd have to stop wearing aggressive scents and clapping and waving banners. Our guest, Myron Magnet, is a prize-winning author and journalist. He's a really nice guy, too. Editor-at-large of City Journal, and he's the author of a new book called Clarence Thomas and the Lost Constitution. He previously served as the editor of the City Journal and member of the board of directors of Fortune magazine. He's one of America's leading public intellectuals and recipient of the National Humanities Medal. Pretty fun, in 2008. He's a frequent media guest. We've had him on once before. We spoke about his book, Clarence Thomas and the Lost Constitution, and I've got that interview posted for you. But in the discussion that we were having with him, there were all these interesting things about Clarence Thomas, just about him, the guy, and his life. And we realized we just didn't know enough, and probably no one else did either. So seemed like a good time to have him pop on with us and do a little chatting about that. So we're saving you from discussing taxes and all that. We're going to skip right over taxes and go right to something interesting, biography of someone who's awesome.
Not that taxes aren't interesting. Come on,
taxes are always captivating. People are like, oh, let's hurry and tune into that show about the taxes. But anyway, Myron, how's it going today? And thanks for being available.
Comrade Aaron and I, Comrade Bill.
Have you seen that video?
How is Z today?
Totally. Have you seen that yet? that video?
I was listening in as you were broadcasting it. I mean, I just can't believe
it. You got to see it. I'm going to put it on the webpage for today. I'm not kidding you. It is a gut buster.
It's awesome. It's absolutely awesome. You know, everything that starts on college campuses ends up in the wider culture. This is an argument that we cultural conservatives have been making for 30 years now. And it's just unbelievable that in this academic world of where there's only white privilege and white guilt and minority victimology, everybody has to be safe from everything. And it's a wonderful contrast with my hero Clarence Thomas, because one of the arguments that I make in Clarence Thomas and the Lost Constitution is that he is really trying to restore that Constitution of Liberty that the framers gave us 232 years ago. That Constitution that was something unexampled in human history and remains just as avant-garde today as it was then, namely the idea of a government that isn't supposed to rule you, but actually is just to keep you safe for self-government. Americans are going to have self-government. And there's nobody who has come up with something newer and shinier than that. But along with that vision of, you know, of a minimal government that just keeps you safe for freedom, went the idea that to be capable of citizenship in a society with such a government took a certain kind of character that you had to be a self-reliant, self-governing, responsible individual in order to be capable of the burdens of independence, and that it took a certain kind of culture to nurture citizens of that kind. And what's just amazing to me is that what we've just been listening to with these democratic socialists is that this is the opposite. We are now breeding a culture of wusses.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, we talk about the greatest generation. I mean, let's think back for a minute, right? Think back to Christmas Eve, 1776. There is Washington.
Yep.
On the Pennsylvania side of the Delaware River. His army has fled across New Jersey starting in the summer. So now their summer clothes have turned to rags, but it's winter. Their shoes have rotted away, and the ground is covered with ice. And their army is now so small that you could fit it into Madison Square Garden four times over. And Washington says, guys, we got to go back across the Delaware and fight those Hessians in Trenton. Who's willing to go with me? And nobody moves. And he rides up and down the line on his horse. And he asks again, he says, if ever your country needed you, it's today. Today, he said, never, never will anyone forget what you have done. This is the moment to decide. And finally, one guy takes a step forward, and then another and another, and finally, all of them have stood forward, and they march the, 12 miles through the snow, cross the Delaware, march into the oncoming snowstorm, where the Hessians, of course, don't expect them. It's a myth that they were drunk. They weren't drunk at all. They knew something was up, but they didn't know where it was coming from. And out of the blinding snow explode these crazed colonists with their muskets. And win the Battle of Trenton, and then go on 2 days later to win the Battle of Princeton. This is the turning point of the Revolutionary War. And of those men who stepped forward on those Christmas Eve, only a quarter of them lived to tell the story. Wow. So you want to know what it takes to be free and to maintain freedom. You actually have to have that kind of grit. And when you listen to a bunch of limp-wristed...
You're lucky if they even have limp wrists. We have to take a really swift break here. We kind of walked you into a box canyon there on that one. Sorry.
That's the West speaking.
Welcome to the box canyon. You got 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Just for you and anybody else who wants to, I did post both the Life of Brian thing where the guy talks about how he wants to be a woman. So the Monty Python skit is on there, and also the Democratic Socialist Convention. And seriously, don't believe us. Go on and watch. It was real. And that one poor idiot kept giving his first name, last name in the city he lives in.
And his.
Wouldn't you love to work with that guy? You'd just be never ending. You'd be in the principal's office every day.
If he works for Google, they'll promote it.
Probably. He's probably true. All proud of himself. That's sad. Well, we mock him. So anyway, right. You can find that at wethepeopleradio.us. We will be right back. And we're back in reality.
Myron, I have to ask you, if any of these folks that were at the convention were huddled around a campfire having to cross that river, I don't think a single one of them would have done it.
No, they wouldn't have done it. And had they come across, they wouldn't have been able to fire either because it would have been much too aggressive.
Well,
the noise would have scared them.
They would have been holding guns.
And let alone all the aggressive scents that there probably were.
Yeah, there were probably a lot of aggressive scents.
Well, yeah, the smell of the powder would have done it for them.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So I think there's, it's funny, I mean, it may be that you are old enough to remember this too, but there was only one downside of the collapse of the Soviet Union, which is when I was young, we used to be able to say, what, do you really want to live under a regime like communism? And there were so many stories from dissidents or escapees of what it was like to live under tyranny. And so we were well aware that we had in America something that was extraordinary and well worth defending. But now that the Soviet Union is just a kind of thug, is merely a thugocracy, without any ideology whatsoever. It's kind of hard to say, oh, well, look at these evil regimes. Look what can happen. And so we don't appreciate that we live in a free republic, and one of the things that makes it free is that we have this extraordinary constitution that understands that people have within them the capacity for evil and the capacity for wanting to rule and control others. So our framework of government does not give any single person or body the power to turn into an unelected despot.
But that's where they've forgotten that part. I mean, they continue to
misrepresent it.
Well, they misrepresent it, but they also believe that we can do it differently. I mean, we can be socialist and we wouldn't turn out that way. When in fact, every single time it's tried, it's failed. And don't you think it's a little bit belligerent to think that we could do it differently and we wouldn't turn out that way?
Well, I think they have a fundamental misunderstanding of human psychology. They believe that people are naturally good. And that left to themselves, people would cooperate just like in nursery school. Everybody would take turns. Everybody would share.
But they don't. They never did.
And they never did in nursery school,
no.
You know, either. No. And what they believe is that social inequities are what make for human disagreement, and that if only we had a proper society, then natural human goodness would out. Well, that's just not the way it is. Like every other creature, women, comrade, are aggressive,
yeah. Exactly.
Right? And, you know, wish to take what other people have, use them sexually without their consent, kill them, dominate, enslave, what have you. So yay for us that we actually found a way to create a government to protect us from internal and external aggression, while at the same time creating all these internal guardrails so that the governors don't turn into the rulers and the oppressors. That's pretty fantastic. But as I say, as with, you know, as Clarence Thomas has insisted over and over again in his, everybody thinks of him as being the silent justice. He is very far from silent. The guy is an inveterate speech maker, and he loves to participate in symposia that you can find all over YouTube. One of the things he really likes to point out is that you've got to have this sense of self-reliance in order to be a free citizen, and that's why he's always talking about his own biography. He's kind of holding himself up as an example. You know, here's this guy who was born in a kerosene-lit shanty in a Georgia swamp. He was poor. But he remembers his very earliest years in an idyllic kind of Huck Finn way, as the kids ran around these swamps and bayous in South Georgia. And then when he was seven or so, his mother, who by this time had divorced his father, moved him and his little brother to Savannah, to a horrible Savannah slum, where he says, on her meager maid's wages, we knew hunger without the prospect of eating and cold without the prospect of warmth. He speaks about the privations of that year. And finally, his mother realized that she couldn't keep him, and I think didn't really want to anymore. She had a new man by then. So she turned the two little boys over to her father and stepmother, who just lived around the corner a few blocks away, but it was like light years away. It was a kind of Huck Finn-like transformation. So Grandfather Anderson, this is Clarence Thomas's mother's father, Myers Anderson, was the child of a single parent, had grown up knocked from pillar to post, and at a certain point had fathered an illegitimate child before he got married. But he decided to make something of himself. He is your true American self-made man. So to start with, he converted to Catholicism from the free-form Southern Baptist church he'd been raised in. He started a wood and coal delivery business, which by the time Clarence and his brother were little kids was now a teeny fuel oil delivery business. But it was enough to provide him with a cinder block house that he built himself with porcelain indoor plumbing and a full fridge. He and his wife had never had children together. So Clarence and his little brother kind of filled a need in their lives. And so his grandfather gave them this extremely structured, old-fashioned upbringing, enrolled them in Catholic school, very strict school, segregated like everything else in Savannah, but teaching that all men were created equal in the eyes of God. So
that was actually a lucky break for them at that point.
Unbelievable. And, yeah. You know, the nuns who ran that school were mostly Irish immigrants. The whites in Savannah got wind of what they were doing in this school and just, you know, dismissed them all as the nigger sisters.
They were just
scandalized by this. But no, the nuns had them learn the preamble to the Constitution by heart.
Trust me, I went to Catholic school. I can still recite all the prepositions in order.
Hold that.
You had to stand up and do it. You were a dunce.
Well, hold that thought. Hold that thought, Aaron. We got a break.
Got to take a really real quick break. We'll be right back.
Last one before
with
the
our guest Myron Magnet that we pulled in early, and we're going to keep as a hostage for the next hour. Is that cool with you, Myron?
Yeah. All right.
I'd love to ask you while everyone can hear you.
Nice.
No pressure.
Right. Thank you, comrade.
Yeah,
we'll be right back.
What are you going to do? Wine?
Point of personal privilege.
Point of personal privilege. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. That's what the left hears when Donald Trump talks. Every time he speaks, they can hear that song in the background. good call, Ashley. So, do we have a lot of stories like this in our Supreme Court justices? I don't know how many others you've studied, but is this a pretty common story? Because it seems really remarkable to me.
No, I mean,
he's one of a kind.
You wonder, can you go from log cabin to White House in 21st century America? Well, this is pretty darn close, right?
Yeah.
From a Georgia swamp to the Supreme Court bench.
Yeah.
I mean, this is this is a really extraordinary man, and I think I said to you the last time we talked that I think that Clarence Thomas is the most consequential jurist of our age, and certainly his backstory is something different. So here he is growing up in the Savannah slum, and from the time he's in third grade, his grandfather puts him to work in the fuel oil business, delivering oil. You know, and I mean, it's not enough that they have to get up way before dawn on winter mornings. No. In order to make sure they don't doze off in the truck, Grandfather Anderson disconnects the heater so that the heat won't lull them to sleep. So they're freezing.
Such a grandfather trick,
right? I mean, they go to Catholic school, you know, until school lets out. Then they deliver oil or take orders, and then in the family, from Reconstruction days, there were 60 acres in southeast Georgia. I mean, you want to hear something, you know, sort of grotesquely ironic. Across the street from where their ancestors had been enslaved, and so the family owned these 60 acres, and nobody had any use for them. So Grandfather Anderson took the two boys down there one summer, and they built a cinder block house with their own hands and broke up the land and cultivated it and planted crops. And then every summer thereafter, they would spend the entire summer going down there, growing crops, tending the fields, raising livestock. At the end of the summer, they'd butcher a few animals and put them in the freezer in Savannah for the winter. And they always, like anybody who farms, right, they always had too much, so they would share it with their neighbors. And so he had like a pioneer upbringing. If you want, he learned how to be self-reliant by relying on himself. He was, as he says, we were never on the grid. It's not like we had an off-grid existence. We were never near it.
Yeah. Wasn't an option.
He's like, you know, a sturdy self, you know, sturdy, independent yeoman of the kind who stood at the bridge in Concord and Lexington, you know. His ambition, and certainly his grandfather's ambition for him, is that he should be the first black priest in Savannah. And he goes off to a seminary.
How old was he at that point?
He was 17 or 18.
Wow.
He went off to a kind of seminary preschool at the very end of high school, and then off to a real seminary when he was, I guess he just turned 18, and he went off to a seminary in St. Louis, and that was the year that Martin Luther King got shot, and he was one of two black kids in this seminary, and one of his fellow seminarians, you know, he met real racism of a kind he hadn't seen even in segregated Savannah in the seminaries. And when Martin Luther King got shot, one of his fellow seminarians said, "Good, I hope the son of a bitch dies." And
it's unbelievable to hear that out of a seminarian.
Well, that's exactly what Thomas says.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
He says that did it for my vocation, right? Mm-hmm. If somebody who was supposed to be a man of God would wish this on another man of God, this is not for me.
Yeah.
So this caused an irreparable break with his grandfather. But in any event, by then, the very dynamic new president of Holy Cross was out recruiting smart black kids, found Clarence and recruited him. So he started there, I think, as a sophomore, And then, of course, immediately became a black radical. Because it was the beginning of affirmative action, there was a handful of black kids on the Holy Cross campus. They had their black floor in the dorm, and they talked about how oppressed and abused they were, and how the revolution was coming, and how America was this irreparably racist society, and on they went in this vein. And he was in the Black Students Union, and he wore overalls with one of the straps undone and the proper radical fashion of the time. And,
just don't picture that with him now. You know, you only.
Well, he was thinner then. and then at the very end of his junior year, he went off to Holy Crosses in Worcester, Mass. And he went off to a demonstration in Harvard Square that turned into a grade A riot. A friend of mine was watching it and said, "Boy, it was violent. I mean, businesses got torched, cops got grabbed and roughed up. There were injuries. There was tons of damage. There was plenty of looting." And Thomas gets back to Holy Cross in the morning and goes into the chapel and starts to pray and prays to God to take this anger away from him, because he says if he goes on like this, it's just going to ruin his life. And he said, you know, he asked himself at that moment, did he believe in America? Did he believe that in some fundamental way what the nuns had taught him about this being a country dedicated to the proposition that all men were created equal? And he said, yeah, he did. He believed that.
In spite of what he'd been through. Yep. And so this would have been, what, around 68, somewhere in there? And
it was around 71.
71, okay. So he had a pretty good perspective at that point in his life of what things were truly like.
He did.
Fellers, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but we have to take a quick break for the news. It's either capitalism or the news. Everything's breaking in on us. What the heck?
All right. We'll
but we'll be back
up
with our guest, Myron Magnet. We're talking about Clarence Thomas, Justice Clarence Thomas. And you're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.